Welcome to another episode of Bulletproof. We want to thank everybody out there right now for making our show a top 10 podcast on Apple and as well as Spotify. And it's not because of my voice or what I say or what I do. It's because I have amazing guests, like our next guest. We love to get interesting guests, and I b do believe, and I'm going to say right off the bat, I think I got one. So today's guest, Keith Groundsell. Leadership enforcement consultant with decades of experience in undercover operations, narcotics investigations, and high-risk environments. And I think that's being a little underselling it. He's worked on the inside of cases most people see on TV. He's trained leaders, officers, organizations, and how to operate under pressure situations. And I'm super excited to get into this today. Because I'm very curious on how A he's even got into this and what a day-to-day looks like. So, Keith, first of all, welcome to the show.
Man, thanks for having me, Steve. I'm excited to be here, brother, just to have a
No, I'm excited to
conversation
have you.
with you. Yeah,
I'm excited to
absolutely.
have you. Yeah, I mean, you make, I think I was at NYPD for 7 years. I'm
Nice.
a badass. And you know what? No, I'm not when I speak to some of the people some of my guests like yourself. So, before we get into the details, I should say, what's the biggest thing that TV always gets wrong with what you're doing about undercover work? What's the one thing, like when you're watching a film,
Yeah.
what's the one thing that you laugh at?
Yeah,
Saying.
the biggest thing for me is it's not just in undercover work, it's in police work in general, is we're human. We're going to make mistakes. We're not superheroes. We can't, make it in these movies that they put out there where you're getting into shooting every single night and you kill five or six bad guys and then you're back at work the next day is not a reality. It's a picture that's painted. I've worked internationally. I've worked in the United States, and it's funny because when I started working internationally on contracts with the federal government, some of the guys that I first met from foreign countries, they'd be like, "Man, America is like the best law enforcement in the world." And I watch Cops, man. You guys have action all the time. Well, they see Cops, but they don't realize that's several days of filming to get, a 30-minute, clip put together to show the action. But they think that's what it's really all about. And the reality is it's 95% of, paperwork and just dealing with people on a general basis and about 5% of action. And that's what I think most people get wrong about policing.
100%. And it's funny, asking this question. Do you remember the movie Training Day?
Oh, absolutely.
That's a great movie. I listen.
Yeah.
I actually have worked with Denzel. He's great.
Nice.
But as a cop, when you watch Training Day, it's the most ridiculous movie of all time. That all
Yes.
of that happens in one night, and it's like, get the point, get the point. You know what I mean? It's like, come on. You know what I mean? So
Yeah.
I'm sure there's things you saw, on TV, and you're like,
Yeah.
really, dude? You know what I mean? So that's
Oh,
why
yeah.
I was always asked that, because again, taking myself out of when I'm being a police officer for a point in my life, I enjoy that movie, taking myself out of,
Same
but
here.
when you see a movie like that, it's like, really, dude? I mean, you couldn't
Yeah.
you make this a little more realistic, you know what I mean? But
Well, I always say this. I always say when you're dealing with undercover work, I actually studied movies because I know actors and actresses take a lot of time to study their role and really get deep into it. And they try and make it as realistic as possible. But the reality in undercover work is you don't have a take two, you don't have a cut. If you screw up, you can die. And that's the thing about undercover, especially when you get to the point where you're going deep undercover, where you're kind of living that role and on a day-to-day basis, and you're not just doing a by bust and going in and coming out like a short-term undercovers. When you're actually in it, you're not busting people, you're living the life. You have to learn to do things and get around, without violating the law, but still have street creds. And that's where it became rather difficult to do as an undercover. And that's where I believe having a little bit of street savviness and not growing up goody two shoes or anything like that. I mean, I wasn't a guy who never got in any trouble myself. I got in trouble. I got in plenty of fights. There were things that I did growing up, which I believe made me a better cop because I never forget where I come from. I was always a cop that was willing to work with somebody if they made a huge mistake in their life. I was the guy who was going to be like, all right, this guy's, he screwed up big time. And yeah, I was there to arrest him, but do I really want to prosecute this to the fullest extent of the law and destroy this guy's life forever? Or do I want to give this guy an opportunity and show some empathy and talk to the prosecutor's office and maybe dismiss the charges based upon them giving information or working as an informant and then really impacting more lives than just that arrest? So you can't arrest your way out of a problem when it comes to law enforcement. And I think a lot of people think you can. Oh, just arrest them. People
Right,
get out
right.
of prison. Most
Right.
people don't go to prison for life. They're going to get
Right.
out.
Where did you grow up, Keith?
So I grew up, I was a military brat. My father was a United States Marine, 22 years. So I was born in Beaufort, South Carolina. My dad was assigned at Parris Island there, lived in California, Louisiana, Washington, D.C., all through elementary school. I was outside of D.C. area. My dad retired from the Marine Corps. We went back to South Carolina in the upper state of South Carolina in the Greenville area. And
Right.
that was kind of where I put my roots, and stayed there pretty much from fifth grade on until, I became a special agent with DEA. I got stationed in the Midwest, traveled all over, did 8 years internationally policing and worked in multiple different countries around the world.
So also again, do you think growing up as an army brat, you think that kind of, 'cause you're all over the fucking place, right? So again, that's not
Yeah.
easy for everybody, right?
So
So do you
I'll
think
say
that kind of
this.
set you up for this?
I think so. So I was a Marine brat. Let me get that clear, man. My
Oh, I'm
dad,
sorry. Oh, sorry.
he'll
My
check me
bad.
real quick, man.
Yeah, no, listen,
It's a
that's definitely
different
a different,
breed.
that's
It's a
different
different
breed.
breed. I got a
100%.
son who's
100%.
in active duty U.S. Army right now as well. But I will say this. Every 4 years or less, you're moving. You have to learn to overcome and adapt. You have to make new friends really quick. You have to play sports. If you're on one team that's really good and you move somewhere else, that was kind of my in, getting in, being athletic. I think having grown up like that and having moved around and transitioned into adapting into different environments made me a really good undercover. And I felt comfortable going into an environment where I didn't know anybody. And
Right.
that may sound odd to some people, but
No, that's a big thing, though.
it was second nature to me. And plus, for me, growing up as a Marine Corps brat, my dad was an enlisted man. He wasn't an officer. So we lived on base housing, then we lived off the base. I hung out with everybody, man. There was no different classes or anything like that. We
Right.
didn't know any different. So I could be friends with the kid down the road that doesn't have a pot to piss in, or the wealthiest kid in the state. His parents are the wealthiest. It didn't matter to me because, friendship is friendship. That's why I have such a small circle, of
Right.
true friends in this world.
That's awesome. What would you say to the mental toll of staying undercover for extended period of time? What is the biggest challenge for being undercover for, again, like you discussed,
I'll
not in and
say,
out for, playing, being the role? What is that like? Is there any anguish? Is there any toll that gets taken?
Let's say it's twofold. And the reason I say one side is there's a huge toll that's taken on your family. That's why I say
Sure.
undercover is a young man's game. When I first went deep undercover, I wasn't even married. And then I transitioned over 6 years deep undercover to being married, having a child, having my second child, and my mindset changed. I lived like I was going to die. I felt like I was going to die before I was 30 years old. I don't know why. And I truly wanted to go out in a gunfight. That was my mindset. So I wasn't scared of anything. I was a fearless guy. I'm not a big guy. I lift weights, I do all that stuff, but I'm mentally very, very tough. And the mental side for me personally was like this. It's the best way to explain it. Imagine you're doing the job that you always wanted to do. It's the coolest job in the world, the most dangerous job in the world, I truly believe, as a deep undercover person, but you can't tell a damn soul about it. So you're doing that day in and day out. You're having these massive adrenaline dumps. and you have zero outlet to be like talk about it, 'cause your other undercover, you know, I had an undercover, I had a couple of really good undercover partners, and we talked about things, but for the most part, most of us were like humble guys, and it wasn't something that we went outside our little circle and talked about. Although later on, when I got out, you know, started telling stories, people were like, holy crap, you know, I can't believe you did things. That's what got me into writing my book, you know, because I felt like that was my outlet. So I started writing a journal when I was deep undercover, and that's what led to writing book down the road. The journal was my outlet to express like what I was mentally going through at the time. You befriend people, and these people are kind of like you and I. You know, they just, you know, there's a fine line between cop and criminal. Sometimes when you're young, you can, some of my friends went that route and went to prison, and then some of my friends went in the police route. And for me personally, I never forget that. And I see myself in some of these guys, and they just took a wrong turn. And then you got to infiltrate their organization, and you eventually take the organization out. And these people are facing substantial prison sentences. So mentally, man, that messed with me a little bit. I'm not gonna lie to you. A few of the guys that I infiltrated, I got to like them and their personalities. I didn't think they
Right,
were
no doubt,
bad.
no doubt,
Yeah, I didn't
absolutely.
think they were terrible people. I just think they made bad decisions, and we weren't pushing out the poison of fentanyl today. It was more the heroin. Fentanyl was towards the tail end of my career, and so nowadays, man, with fentanyl, we had pharmaceutical grade fentanyl. And it was sold in little antique suckers. You could buy them on the market, but it wasn't popular. People weren't trying to just like kill themselves, you know, taking a, you know, a grain of salt size of something and it overdoses you, and you get excited because of the purity level. Hey, kill five people. That's the good stuff.
And not
Let's
only that, it's
go
fucking, you
buy
know,
that.
right. And then you fucking try to revive them, and then you're
Yeah.
fucking falling over too. You know what I
Man,
mean? It's crazy. But
it's crazy.
would you say again, you know, not to re I'm not re repeating the question. I'm just trying
Yeah.
to phrase it a different way. Would you say there's a certain time frame, and maybe not for you, of course, but from what
Yeah.
you noticed, where people start to really kind of fall in? You know,
Yeah.
almost like a Donnie Brasco type of thing. Is
Yep,
there
absolutely.
a you know, is, what would you say is like a time frame where it's like, all right, you know, maybe you're in this thing too long.
I
You know what I
really
mean?
truly, yeah, no, that's an excellent question. It really is. Never been asked that. I really think it truly depends upon the person. You have to have good supervision. I really believe, like, as a supervisor over a vice narcotics unit, human trafficking, whatever they're concentrating on, if you have undercovers, you need to be really close to them, and you need to be talking to them as much as you can. A lot of times you'll be gone for weeks at a time, and you're just doing telephone stuff and sending emails and stuff like that. So you're a little out of touch, you know, with things, and they can't see. Is he's undercover and he's drinking, but is he doing that for his role, or is he going home and drinking too? You know, when I was undercover, I drank. And I smoked, and I don't drink or smoke hardly any now. So for me, I did it so much that I wanted to get away from it when I was in outside of that. You know, that was how I was able to turn it on and turn it off. But there were times, you know, I caught myself. I felt like I was one of them, man. I felt like I was a gangster. And I remember one incident specifically. I was about 3 years in deep undercover, and we had already had like a hit on a few of us in our unit. I was on edge a little bit. We had taken out some really bad guys. I didn't really know. I remember this car going into work late at night. This car pulled up on me, and they were on me like I didn't know if they were like trying to get me on me instead of just somebody going fast. They rode up on my bumper, almost touching it. You know, I tried to, you know, let them go around and stuff like that. They pulled up beside me, swerved at me, and I'm like, this is somebody trying to hurt me, you know. So I something flipped in me. Instead of like, you know, getting on the phone, trying to contact some uniform officers, I just gunned it, power slid in the road, blocked the two lanes, and went and yanked the dude out the window. And you know, and they like caught myself in the middle of it, like, what the hell are you doing? Like, truly in the zone, pulled them through the window, ready to just beat them down right there. And then it's like, oh my God, crap. And I threw him on the ground and I ran back to my car and I took off.
Why would you know, did you ever find out why he was
I don't
following you,
know. I
or
really don't think it was associated with anything with drugs. I was hypervigilant and
right?
paranoid.
I got
And
you.
truly, I think it was just a dude with a little bit of road rage. And he messed around with the wrong dude at the wrong time. And it
Right.
was just like, but that's me. I'm a guy who learned to control my temper over years of playing sports and, consequences in school, getting in fights. And then as a police officer, I have the ability to de-escalate or fight, and I chose try and de-escalate, but I'm not going to back down from a fight. So, I've been in plenty of fights. And when that happened, I'm like, dude, I can't do that. And I'm not that guy right
Right.
there that I just displayed. So, I took a few days off and just was kind of doing a little bit of reflecting. For me, another outlet was working out, really, really, really killing it. And I couldn't go to the gym because I was in a undercover in a big steroid ring at one time. And at Gold's Gym, you're seeing all these big meatheads, and then next thing you're arresting those dudes. So then your gym membership's kind of out the window after
Right,
that. So you got to do the home gym, but all that does is it makes you more recluse. So you have zero outlets, at all. It's really not a good thing. You have to have something out
of
there
course.
to relieve stress.
Okay, 100%. What would you say was the closest thing to where something could have gone sideways or went sideways?
Yeah, I quite a few times.
But was it because you were
Yeah.
paranoid, or was
No, 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 no. I had people
shit
that
was
were
going
actually,
sideways?
no, I had people actually were going to kill me. I two times really,
Well, again,
undercover.
I mean, did somebody blow you? Not blow you. That sounds crazy. Did somebody blow? Did somebody blow
Well, you
you?
can't go that
Yeah,
deep
it's a
undercover.
different. That's a different show, bro. So did
Yeah.
somebody blow your cover, or did
Yeah.
you get into
No,
a
I'll tell
situation where
you.
you kind of?
So the first one was it was a gang that I had infiltrated, and kind of we were surveilling them, so we knew when they were there, when they weren't there. I would buy at one level in the organization, and then when they were out of town, I would intentionally call them and order up a larger quantity of drugs so they would hook me up with another guy in the organization. And that was how I was kind of climbing the ranks. And it took months and months to do that. It wasn't like an overnight thing, but I had hung out with these guys. They had wined and dined me. Develops kind of like what we would consider a friendship with these guys, although I was acting, the whole time, but I was still being kind of who I am. Don't ever go into an undercover role and act like you're somebody that you're not at all close to, that you'll get burned in a heartbeat. So I, got in with these guys, and eventually I ordered up a large quantity. We were ready to close down the operation. I was buying thousands of ecstasy pills from this guy that I bought dozens of times from. And he shows up this time and he's acting totally different than he did the first dozen times that I dealt with him. And that was a big red flag for me. Then he's all of a sudden, he's like, hey, man, won't you ride with me? And I never rode with him. He always jumped in a car with me.
Right.
So that's another red flag. He never showed up with more than one car. He showed up with another car. And I'm like, all these indicators are here. But as an officer, you're going to do the takedown so you have people on standby. So
Well, let me ask you
you're.
a question with that, just to
Yeah, yeah,
piggyback
yeah.
off that. So in that situation, right, when they come and they collar all these guys, do you get collared as well?
Absolutely. Yeah. So
Right,
in
right,
this
right,
scenario,
right, right, all
in
right.
this
I was gonna say.
scenario, I was going to jail with them. I mean,
Right.
there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And to be honest, after the arrest is when a lot of the talking actually happens, especially as you get into federal cases, you're on
Right.
wiretaps and stuff like that. So I get this guy to get in the car with me. We start driving around. He's looking all over the place. He's acting really nervous when he never did before. I saw the one car following us, but I couldn't see how many occupants. It was tinted out windows. His girlfriend was driving. Then it looked like another car may have been in the distance, but I wasn't positive about it. And it just got to the point where we were back and forth. He wouldn't even show me the drugs, which is
And
very unusual.
what do you think happened? Did something?
So, long story short, so we're in the front seat of the car. I pull over and I'm just like, man, I'm not rolling around anymore. I didn't know my body wire had went out. My
Oh,
surveillance
wow.
team had lost me. I'm in the middle of a old strip mall park. He tried to ask me to go. This was the main red flag. He asked me to take him to an apartment complex that's abandoned, that I
Right.
know they've dumped bodies there before. So I'm like, yeah, I didn't indicate to him I knew that, but that was like number one red flag right there. So I pulled over, started talking with him. He doesn't want to show me the drugs. He pulls out a bag of cocaine, starts snorting cocaine, offers me some coke. Previously, I'll get into that. I had simulated using drugs with him, so he believes I'm a user. So he offers me some coke. I'm like, nah, man, I got to drive this 2 hours away. I just need to make this deal. He gets a little suspicious of it, asks me if I got on a wire, which he's never asked me anything about that. And I'm like, so he goes to like fill me up and I shove him and I'm in the driver's seat and he's in the front passenger seat. So he backs off a little bit when he sees I get offended by what he said, and he pulls out the bag again and puts it up to my face, and to the
I would
point
have
where he's
fucking, if I were
putting,
you, I would have done a fucking railroad line.
bro, that's it.
I would have
So,
fucking lined that shit up and.
I didn't do that, but I basically, when he put the bag up to my nose, I pushed at the same time his hand slipped, and that damn bag of cocaine hit my headliner, my black truck, and it went all over the damn
Oh,
place. And the fight was on. So we're brawling in the front seat. Little did I know, the other car, the second car, had pulled up, and he had a couple guys with ski masks on, guns, rope, duct tape, the whole nine yards. They were going to kidnap me. And they were approaching. Well, about that same time, my surveillance team found me off of one of the busy roads, and they pulled up at the same time in the front. The bad guys are approaching from the back. I'm in the driver's seat fighting this guy in the front cockpit of the truck. It's a four-door truck, though, but I'm fighting them. The doors are locked, so my team's approaching. They draw down on the other guys. Surprisingly, the other guys dropped their guns, didn't shoot it out because they clicked on their blue lights in one of the undercover cars. And I'm still fighting while they're taking these guys down. So I have the conscious state of mind enough to, while I'm fighting, to unlock the door, just because it seemed like it was going on forever and we're more of a wrestling match locked up with each other. And they pull them out, they pull me out, they arrest us. And I'm sitting in the back seat of the car, headbutting the mirror, like, I'm gonna fuck you up, man. You set me up, you fucking snitch, the whole nine yards, playing the game. And then they take us both off to jail. So
what do you think
that
happened there,
guy,
though? Where do you
so
think it went
here's
wrong?
what happened. So they interviewed these guys afterwards, and one of them cooperated because he didn't want to go down with all these guys. They
Right.
had fake ecstasy pills. They didn't even have the real drug. They were actually just straight up going to rob me and then shoot me and kill me.
So it
And
wasn't like the cover was blown. It was just like they were gonna
yeah, it was
try
just,
to.
I had ordered up. So this is where it gets dangerous undercover. If you're buying ounces, and you always buy ounces, it stays consistent. But then all of a sudden, most cops or most bad guys get robbed when they're bringing up the value, $10,000 or $20,000, when the money's coming to the table. That's the most dangerous time in an undercover deal. And they saw the dollar signs, these guys,
Right.
and they wanted the free money, because if you have fake ecstasy pills and I'm buying them at $18 a pill for thousands of pills, you're going to make some bank off of that. And so they looked at it like that. So one of the guys cooperated. They ended up telling the guys, the detectives that interviewed them, yeah, we was going to rob them and shoot them. And they didn't know I was a cop, though. So they told this to these guys, and that's how I figured out what really was going down with the situation. And the whole story, long story short, they go to jail. I end up getting, bonded out, and later on, and I'm separated from them, so I'm not seeing these guys or anything like that, and I'm not put in any further danger. But one of the guys who's the head guy of the gang, he went by the street name B. He's a stick up boy for the gang, and he wrote a letter to the judge. It's like, if this guy's a cop, because they had to reveal it in the affidavits, if this guy's an undercover cop, then he's a dirty ass cop, because I snorted cocaine with him. I did this with him. We got in fights. We did all this stuff. Well, little did he know, he was admitting that he gave me the cocaine that we snorted together. So he admitted in his letter that he did a distribution. So therefore, he had to plead guilty to the charges. And it was kind of ironic and kind of funny in the whole big scheme of things. But yeah, I mean, it was business for them. They were going to make money. And they were going to shoot me. And that was it, man. I later on did a murder for hire, my first murder for hire. Guess how much they were going to, like, it was going to cost. Like, the going rate to shoot somebody in the hood was $500.
Oh
That's
my
it.
God. I was gonna
So
say
we're
like
not talking
I was gonna say like
thousands.
15 grand. I was gonna say something like that.
Bro, it blew my mind. And I was like, because I was trying to feel out the market because I'm not in the business, killing people all the time. But so we're trying to, find out. We hear about all these elaborate insurance scams and they're going to get this money. That's not what it was. This is straight up just murder this person for me. I'll give you $500. And
That's crazy.
it's like
That's
500
crazy.
freaking dollars to destroy your life, man. And people do it. $100 to shoot somebody sometimes just to pop you in the leg.
It's
I mean,
crazy.
I was like, that's life. That's how they look at life on the street.
Yeah,
So
there's no value. There's no life value.
none
None. None.
whatsoever.
They could give a fuck. So here's another question I had because, like I said, I almost went to narcotics for a while.
Nice.
But again, I used to be. Like old, I was juiced up myself, right? So I the
Yeah,
only
yeah.
time I would buy, right, would be like you said, steroids, guns, stuff like that. So it was funny. We used to have a beeper, bro. Back in, I'm talking about the 90s. It was the
Yeah.
size of this on my
The Alpha Mate pager.
like my big pager, right. It was so fucking ridiculous how they didn't realize. But what I wanted to say is, when you get deep into narcotics like that, right? Is there a certain, again, inside rule or unwritten rule that when you're doing shit, right? When you gotta listen, you gotta do what you gotta do, whether it's heather, heroin, coke, this, that. Is there a certain like amount or a certain thing where you're like, wait a minute, I gotta be careful here. And maybe, and it might not even be because you're doing at, a certain amount. But maybe now you'll start to get more talkative and you'll be, when people do coke, right? You end up in places with people you would never hang out with, talking about fucking nonsense things you would never talk about. So
Absolutely.
was it
So
more of,
here's how you do it, man. So the rule is not to use drugs, but if it's life and death, obviously you're in a situation you don't want to die. You're gonna do it, but you're gonna compromise yourself if you do it. So for me, I never had to, and I'm gonna tell you, and I spent many years deep undercover, and I'm gonna tell you how I did it. So me, I actually made my own fake drugs. I had lidocaine that I got from my dentist as a numbing agent, and I made my own fake cocaine. And the one key was whenever I was using that, okay, in a one hitter, whenever I was doing a line, whatever I was doing, and if somebody asked me to hit it, they had to already be high. I would never share my shit unless they're already high. So if they were high, there's a psychological effect that goes on with it. If they're already high and it gives the numbing effect in the nasal cavity, and I can do it with them, and I'm doing the
Sweet.
same shit. Yeah. And they imitate you. Same thing with marijuana. I had a company that could get me marijuana with zero THC, and it was marijuana, but it had zero THC to it. So I would smoke it and I would never share it unless they were already high. And that was always the key for me. I was always prepared to use when I was posing as an addict. But when I got up to the higher level, to the cartels, they really didn't want to use drugs. As a matter of fact, they did background checks on me. I had to have a full-fledged state ID card. I had to have a background, even a criminal history that was inserted in there that I got done at the state level. And I maintained that undercover identification for many years. And the cartels are business people. If you're using drugs, they really don't want you to get up. When you're getting up to like the lieutenant level in a cartel and you're dealing with these guys, you're already an outsider. I'm a gringo. So it's not like I'm like getting in any higher than that. So for me is whatever trust I had, I wasn't going to betray it. So it was complicated as far as your background goes to infiltrate cartel. But it was harder up front to deal with street level people who expected you to use drugs because it was all around you. So you always had to have an excuse and you had to be prepared. And a lot of times, for me, I had a female undercover partner a few times, and that was probably one of the best situations for me because you can pose as boyfriend and girlfriend, and nobody will flirt with her because that's your girlfriend. They're not going to disrespect you, but it also allows you to protect them. But the key is, I remember many a times I'm in a party or something like that, and there's a plate of Coke coming around or a joint coming around or something like that, and it's coming up to me, and you don't want to get up and bolt. But your girl can start a fight with you with a phone in an instant and then storm out the room and you chasing her down and you just walked out and it just looks like, damn, she crazy as hell. You know what I'm saying? So to the guys, it didn't throw them off. So you only use that once with each group, but you could use it multiple times if you're infiltrating different organizations in different states and different counties, you can use that same tactic. And you always have to have an excuse. What's your excuse going to be? Are you on probation? Are you getting drug tests? Are you trying to get custody of your children? And you have a drug screen in the morning. Bad guys got kids too, play on their heartstrings. You've got to be able to relate with these people, and it has to be a realistic approach. Because if you come up with some bullshit story, I don't feel like using. You know what I'm saying? It's like, what? What'd you say? You damn snitch! And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're getting your ass beat, if not shot. So I mean, it's happened. I've seen undercovers get beat down. I've seen informants get beat down, or people who they thought were informants get killed, and they weren't even an informant.
That's
So I mean,
crazy.
that happens.
What would you say the biggest misconception of the cartels are? What would you say, like if you look at cartels as obviously
Yeah.
big drug lords or Chapo,
Course.
right? So what would you say from the way the media portrays it to the
Yeah.
way they really are? Would you say, because you said something earlier, you said, they're good businessmen, obviously.
Yeah.
Is that something that you would say would be surprising to people? Or is there one thing that just stands out to you that people would never even think of, being a
Yeah.
cartel member?
So you're never going to get a cartel member to get out of the game. You can legalize marijuana, they ain't getting out the game. They're gonna have a black market for it. You know what I'm saying? It's like 20% of all traffickers sell marijuana. Let's legalize it, and it's gonna cut back. Bullshit. All they're gonna do is hold the people who own the dispensaries, people who own that, they're gonna hold their family members ransom. They're gonna kidnap them, or they're gonna extort money from them. They never get out of it. A criminal doesn't stop being a criminal because you legalize something. It's like, oh, they legalized it. Shit, we're out of a job now. It doesn't work that way. Criminals are always criminals. But one of the biggest problems that a lot of people are misunderstanding nowadays about the cartels is they're transitioning. They're transitioning narco terrorism. Cartels, drugs, and terrorism go hand in hand, all of them. So every single terrorist organization gets their money from the drug cartels. They're involved in the mix. I'll give you an example. When I went to Afghanistan, I spent almost 3 years in Afghanistan. I was a commander over a 5,000-man SWAT team in Afghanistan. We did a lot with poppy eradication program. So 95% of the entire world got their opium from Afghanistan, which was raw to process into heroin. That was Al-Qaeda got all the proceeds from that, which funded terrorism around the world. So that was the true meaning of narco terrorism in Afghanistan right there. So I worked in the middle of that stuff. All these things, it's all linked. And if we don't take it serious, and then here's the other thing. They don't just sell drugs. They're involved in a lot. Human trafficking is
Human
the number
trafficking,
one
right?
rising industry. It's a $150 billion+ industry. And I had a trafficker tell me this, and
Hold
I'll
on one
never
second. Wait, hold
go
on. I
ahead.
want to answer two questions because I want to get this all in before we run out of time. But
Yeah, no
why do
problem.
you think that only has really come to light human trafficking in the last couple of
Yeah,
years? But it's been going on
I
forever.
agree. It has.
Why do you think that it's taken so long to come to light? Is it people that were in denial, or they were just that
Be
stupid,
because
or?
they blame the victims. Prostitution is the oldest profession in the world. It's the oldest profession in America. So you see a girl out there that's prostituting, and you think, well, she's just a drug addict. She's doing it on her own. She's got an addiction problem. In reality, there's a lot more to it. The addiction is part of how they traffic people. You know, they get them addicted to the drugs, and then next thing they know, they need the protection, and then they hold them, you know, in a hotel room, and they make them have sex with 15 guys a night, and it's just so on and so forth. So I believe there was a lot of victim bashing, and it's shameful. The girls feel the shame, which they shouldn't. It's not their fault, but you don't want to come forward when you get out of it. So it's very difficult to bring forward those cases where the victim just wants to move on with their life. So it takes a lot of intelligence. And like I was getting at a minute ago, I had a drug trafficker tell me when we popped him, I was a special agent with DEA. He said, "Why would I sell drugs when I can make a profit one time, but I can buy a human and sell them thousands of times and make profit? And then when I'm done with them, organ harvesting.
Oh my
I just
God.
sell, I sell their body parts, $250,000, $300,000." And
No.
honestly, it blew my mind. And it was just like, man, this is absolute ruthlessness. And they don't care. And people are so blind to it going on all around you. I mean, state-sponsored human trafficking of children happened during the opening of the borders when they weren't, they were bringing in all these unaccompanied minors, 300 plus thousand of them, and they weren't checking out, background checking the sponsorship families. When you do that, you are just signing a note for the cartels to take all these children and they disappear. And they're trying to get accountability of them right now. And they're finding out some are dead, some they just can't find, some they never will find. And they prey on vulnerable populations, poor nations. You look at Mexico, you look at Haiti after the earthquake, natural disasters, Venezuela. And I remember the amount of girls when I was working internationally that came in from fleeing Venezuela to go to the Dominican Republic in human as human trafficking victims. We had magazines for these girls. You'd order, they're all Venezuelan women. They all fled Venezuela because of the regime there. And but weak regimes and poverty can create human trafficking networks, and that goes hand in hand with drugs. So cartels are involved in much more than drugs. We see the drugs, but we don't see the terrorism effects that come from it. They are funding terrorist networks around the world. So taking it very serious is appreciated when I see, like right now, under the Trump regime, we're narco terrorists. We're actually, I've been saying that for
What do
20
you think
some
about that? I
years.
mean, so what we just did, last week.
100%.
I mean,
100%, man. This is, I used to do, I helped out with intercepting go fast boats and things like that as an agent, and even as an international contractor, we took out some loads. Like for example, in Haiti, 10% of all U.S. cocaine coming from Colombia, South America, comes through Haiti as a transshipment point, and they just sit on it in Haiti because they know they don't have a big coast guard, they don't have anybody watching the waters. So the load comes in a go fast boat, they drop it. They let it just sit for like 2 weeks while the gangs guard it. That's how the gangs get all their money here. That's why the gangs are controlling the country right now. So in about 2 weeks, then they get another go fast boat and they take it to the US. And yeah, absolutely. It may not be directly going to the US, but the proceeds are going to harm American citizens. But we are a number one consumer nation. So therefore, they're eventually coming to America. And it's not just killing what they say 100,000 people a year, a little less for fentanyl. When you talk about the drug war, you're talking hundreds of thousands of people every single year are getting killed due to violence from drugs. And I think
Right, that's why.
police agencies are failing, man, big time. They're not
No,
devoting the
absolutely.
resources to it. They devote 3 to 5% of their police force to counter narcotics, but yet 95% of every crime in some way, shape, or form is linked to drugs. So if it's domestic violence because they're high, they have an addiction problem, or if it's a burglary because they're stealing because they have an addiction problem, or it's just sheer violence in a dope deal gone bad, or it's gang violence with drug violence going on in your neighborhood, it's all linked together. You can solve every single crime through narcotics investigations. I solved many of murders. I had guys confess murders to me and demonstrate the murders while I was working undercover. I thought they were bullshitting, trying to get street creds. Long Later on, I find out that's exactly how the murder went down that's unsolved. So, I mean, it's you don't know what you're going to encounter. And I just think most chiefs don't have the experience and they know that it's very risky working undercover, especially in modern day. It's even harder with internet, AI technology, cloning. You can do facial recognition. There's a lot of obstacles that undercovers have now. So it's a lot of social media based undercover tactics that you have to take on. You have to be very savvy when you do it.
Well, like I said, I mean, I'll close with this, and then we're gonna find, how we get your books, see where we can, and do all that
Yeah.
stuff. So again, we just had a big incident, right? Where we got fucking, we took the president, a piece of shit. And again, I laugh because again, I don't get into politics that much, but like I said,
Yeah.
I am on a certain side, and it's the side that we have right now. It's funny because I'm in the entertainment world,
Yeah.
everybody's,
You're an
so
outcast, man.
no doubt. But the point is, again, even if you fucking oppose it, right? And you oppose Trump for whatever reason, how do you have the fucking balls, right, to question it or to fucking say, say, hey, we should have done that. You said everybody on the other side. Again, because if he,
Yeah.
no matter what he does, how awesome it is, they'll always
Yeah.
find something to downgrade it.
Absolutely.
But, and again, that now Britain, UK is now not sharing, intel with us because they don't want us to use that intel to go after, these drug cartels, which again,
Yeah.
what? So my point is, if he stays the path, right, which
Yeah.
I have no doubt he would, because that's what he is, and thank God. Do
Amen.
you think he can really, at the end of the day, make enough difference to change the trajectory of where we are? What
So
are your thoughts?
I truly, in my heart of heart, believe he is the only human being on the earth right now that can do that. I believe when he takes this battle to the cartels on their land, on their home soils, he will destroy them. I'll give you an example. They have a few helicopters and things like that. They don't have air forces. We have the greatest air force in the world, hands down, and special forces. We're the best, hands down. But you got the Colombian cartels in the jungles, making cocaine. We can bomb them. It doesn't take a lot of
Yeah, I mean,
intel
we actually
to
know where
take
they
these
are
guys
right
down.
now. You know what I mean?
Exactly. The
I mean,
DEA's been going in and trying. Lighting the labs on fire and arresting who's there. It's the low-level guys. You're not getting the big dog. But if you
right.
shut down their source, you shut down the boats. They're not able to transport. Okay. You shut down the border where all the drugs are coming in. Now you got to take the fight on their soil. And you don't ask permission. These are terrorists.
Right.
It's funding terrorist networks around the world. So
Right.
either the countries are going to cooperate, or they're going to regret not cooperating. And I will tell you, like a country like Mexico, they don't have the president, whether or not she wants to cooperate, she's not going to, just because if she openly does, that's it. You're done. The cartels do control things, but if an outsider comes in and you're like, no, don't do that, don't do that, it's like blowing up the cartels, and you eliminate some of the cartels, then all of a sudden, like, oh, this is good. We can actually
Right.
have a peaceful society. People live in constant fear. Even in America, there are
Oh,
gangs that are so violent that the police can't help you. You know what I'm saying? Like,
no.
you can't beat the police. You can dial 911 all day long, but an incident to die in takes a second. And
Sure.
if you don't, allow, we have a great leader right now that is not afraid to be destroyed politically, doesn't care about that. Truly, as a patriot, wants the best thing, man. I honestly, if I wasn't 50 years old and I wasn't too old, I would go back in the DEA just under Trump administration. For me personally, that would be the greatest glory. All my buddies in the DEA are retiring now, but I'd be like, man, what a time to be a DEA agent, an ICE agent, an FBI agent. The respect is
Well,
coming back, man. They were weaponized for political purposes against Trump, and now all of a sudden we're actually enforcing the law and we're gaining that respect back. And there's a group of people that just want to undermine Trump
right,
merely because they lost
of
an
course,
election. And that's
of course.
sad, because their families are affected by the cartels, whether or not they want to believe it. These immigrants coming in, not all of them are bad people, but they get radicalized by the far left media when they get to America. I can literally overseas right now, I can turn on CNN. Probably if I watched it, I would hate America. No, but I don't watch it because it's nothing but negativity against our country. But
It's
we are
all
the greatest
propaganda. It's
country.
propaganda, bro. It's propaganda.
Absolutely. Frustrating to see.
Yeah, I mean, we're starting to go up against it here. Again, I
Yeah.
could talk to you for hours.
For sure.
So you've mentioned, Keith, that you've written, you've wrote some books.
Absolutely.
Where can people that are listening to this
Yeah.
either reach out to you personally, or what? Just quickly name some of the books and where they can find them,
Okay.
and purchase if
Yeah,
you know.
absolutely. I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
All my books are available in audio, paperback, or ebook, and they're all available on Amazon. So you can put in my name, Keith Groundsell. It's up on the screen. KEITHGROUNSELL. Like I said earlier, ground without the D and sell. And you look it up, and they're all there. The first book you see up in the top of my picture on the side of me is A Narc's Tale. That's a 4-book series about working deep undercover for 6 years. It covers volume one, covers being thrust into undercover work, a little bit about my upbringing and how I didn't have any training. I got robbed on a deal and I didn't know what the heck I was doing. And then I worked undercover for the city. And then book two and three of A Narc's Tale, volumes two and three, are about working deep undercover for the county. And then volume four is becoming a special agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration and working for them undercover and that whole transition. And then it goes into contracting, international, and how there's always a drug nexus in all crimes, and how I found great success as the chief of police, taking one agency from not being ranked in the top 25 to the number one safest city in the whole entire state of South Carolina by going after the drug cartels and going after real drug traffickers and doing community policing and gaining trust. But I wrote
Okay.
a bunch of books. I could come back on here a million times. I wrote a
No,
book.
we're gonna. We're, I think we're gonna make that happen again, Keith. Like I
Yeah,
said, there's still so much I
leadership.
want to get into. But
Yeah.
the last thing I want to say is there, because you're still deep in it, right? So anybody that's listening, Keith's not even in this country right now. Keith's still,
Yeah.
he's still, he's out there overseas. He's still deep in it. So again, we're not gonna disclose any of that. But is
Appreciate it.
I'm and again I already know the answer to this, but you don't have any social media, right? You probably just have a LinkedIn.
So I actually do, but it's obviously my LinkedIn is not updated. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, but I update it with my book information. And I'm pretty outspoken when it comes to these topics. I'll post about narcotics and narco trafficking and all that. So you'll see a lot of my stuff. I have a huge following on social media. Go to my LinkedIn account, it's in my name. You can go to my YouTube channel. I post a lot of videos of stuff. Some of them have been taken down because they were so violent. Of different things that I've encountered internationally or working undercover. But I try and put it out there. I try and be very transparent without giving away too much, where I'm going to put some undercovers in harm's way or anything like that. But also, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. Instagram, I'm under law enforcement author. Check me out on there. I can give you some stuff. You can
Yeah,
put
we
it
got to
when,
connect. We'll connect, and I'll
yeah,
share everything as
definitely.
well. And
For sure.
definitely, without a doubt. So, Keith, that was awesome.
Appreciate it,
Again, I
brother.
could talk to you for a couple hours. And
Yeah.
again, we'll do this again. But again, thank you so much for coming on, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely.
That's Keith Groundsell. I want to ground sell. It's ground
You
sell.
got it, brother.
And I want to thank again all listeners. I'm excited for this to come out next week. Again, thank you for making us.